Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
I think that was it. Good morning and welcome to Our Black News. I'm Don Allen. In Studio A and Studio B is Mr. Jonathan Mason. Good morning, Jonathan. And this morning,
Don, how are you doing?
Doing great. And also this morning, we're joined by Mr. M from his palatial estate in South Minneapolis. Good morning, Mr. M.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. A lot of stuff going on, Jonathan. First of all, I have to commend you for all the work you're doing in the community with Mr. Royce White. And I know you guys are passing out popsicles and doing all kinds of stuff this weekend, you know, in deep in the hood. And so, personally, I appreciate that, and I admire that work, and that work is important. That work is very important, and I appreciate that. But let's just jump into this right away, because we've been talking about defunding of the police, and taking the police out of the schools, and reforming the police department, and doing all this stuff that is interesting, but I spent a couple days and read a lot of police training manuals from across the United States, New York, Los Angeles, Seattle, Denver, Houston, Miami, and even Chicago. And so I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm kind of comparing it to what Minneapolis is trying to do or what they want to do. There are some models that have defunded the police, but when you say defund the police, people think, oh, yeah, we're just shut it down. And no, that's not how it happens.
Right.
You know, it's a change in culture. But I want to know what you guys are thinking about what's going on. And Jonathan, let's move in right with this. Let's rip the behinds off this city council.
And I'm going to be honest with you. Yes, Don, you really hit it on a major point. So right now, I've been really critical of them because due to the fact that we see the lack of leadership within Minneapolis. And now that they're talking about, you know, they had the 12-0 vote yesterday. It was breaking news. And they were saying, we're going to do drastic changes to Minneapolis police. Well, this is the opportunity, Don. And for me, I'm thinking this is the opportunity for us to sit down and be able to put the oversight and the fail safe and the checkpoints in place so these incidents don't happen. But we know realistically, there's no way that they're going to defund or remove the police from our society.
No, and they can't because there's too many intricate variables and derivatives for this to even happen. And
right.
the Minneapolis City Council, and I'm sure M agrees with this, does not have great organizational health. As far as being able to systematically solve the problem from the bottom up, they're starting at the top, and you can't solve a problem. You can't go 1, 2, 3, 4, because one's going to pop up, and if you solve it from the bottom, you know, you could start at 4 or start at 5, get to 4, and by the time you get to 3, 2 and 1 are solved because you built that foundation.
Right, and that's the major point that you touched on, because what they're trying to do is, because of the lack of leadership over the decades within Minneapolis, we've got to the point where the drastic changes that they think that the community wants is to remove all police, and that's just silly talk. And when we, and I know you've heard it too as well, they just had a report. Felipe Cunningham just said that he's and Andrea Jenkins and them said that they've been getting threats.
Yes,
I'm to the point where it's 2020. If it's an internet threat, let's find the IP address. If not, if it's a threat in person, has the person been arrested? And the work must continue. Don, you know, I'm doing this work against white supremacy, and I'm trying to do institutional change. I'm being threatened as well. No one's worried about all of that, and we're sure not going to be spending $4,300 per week for each individual to have security when you guys ain't even doing your job in the first place.
Well, that's so true, and you know, just to you know, tag on to what you gentlemen are saying. I mean, what they really don't want to see in the police, just like in child protection, just like in education, they don't want to see oversight. They don't want the community to shine the light on what they are really doing. And so this is our opportunity, and I think, Jonathan, you're really leading the movement for this. they need to have oversight. We've had years back when Mr. Edwards and they had community oversight of police things were, we had a say in what they were doing. And I think that hopefully this change and all this upheaval, you know, will make them admit, no, the community needs to have oversight and to have be at the table to see exactly what you folks are doing, to see to make sure that our needs are being met here in the community. And that's the missing piece that I'm seeing.
And yes, yep. You're right. They do not want oversight. The problem is when we start saying oversight, they don't want us to start actually making city council do the things that they're supposed to do. And the problem, and they know that the pressure is building where we're so articulate, we're so direct on
yes.
our demand that we
yep.
don't. Nope, that's not the answer to defund police. So now when we say, oh, no, we want police, we just want good police, and we want there to be fail-safe in there, and we need to see what's going on in city council and why they're not moving fast enough for the people of Minnesota or Minneapolis, per se. And so
yep.
now the pressure is building. Now they're crumbling. This is what it is. They're crumbling.
And for those listening, what my co-host alluded to was, the city of Minneapolis is paying $4,500 per day each for three city council members that are feeling threatened. So our city council is spending $63,000 a week for Felipe Cunningham, Andrea Jenkins, and I think that is Lisa Bender, if I'm not mistaken, because they were receiving threats. And they were saying that it's mostly social media. But again, like you said, alluded to, Jonathan, if that's the problem, let's find out who those people are and deal with it, because that's another bleeding of Minneapolis residents' funds into their personal coffers. And if they need security, they should pay for it. Okay,
right.
They should
right.
not be
right.
using the city's money to for security. These guys are not at that. Go ahead.
Right. They're not that big of a. And I'm going to tell you like this, the lack of leadership, the lack of them doing stuff has got them to this point. And now you're trying to talk about defund policing, but you need security. So can the police secure you? It just doesn't even make no sense. You know, honestly, Don, and we're really to the point in Minneapolis. But we're to the point where we're so frustrated in Minneapolis. The people have woken up and they're going to demand that. Oh, please be held accountable, but this is the trick of it all. We're going to make sure that city council, Andrea Jenkins, Felipe Cunningham, Jeremiah Ellison, Cameron Gordon, Lisa Bender, every single one of them, Kano, will be held accountable. Not when I say accountable, meaning if you don't do what's right, we might pull up to your house, police, palatial, a state or not.
Yeah. And the huge problem here is that We're dealing in a time where, and I always say this, that some of these city council members are pandering to the needs. Yes, George Floyd should have never been choked or anything, and by police. But there was some kind of relationship in there that was building tension for a long period of time. And this was an opportunity for Derek Chauvin to take out his competition, as we might find out later on if there's not a bunch of plea bargaining going on. And so what's happening here, you have a state and two cities in chaos. You have over 120 shootings in the last 4 weeks, in the last 30 days since the killing of George Floyd.
And telling the truth on social. I've heard almost.
We just lost your audio. Just lost your audio there. Yeah, it's been higher than that also. So, what's been going on in South Minneapolis? You've had a lot of shootings over there. What's going on?
Oh, wow, the same type of things. I mean, helicopters overhead, you know, bullets flying all through the night. And then another thing that I'm really getting really concerned about is all the speeding vehicles. All these speeding vehicles that just race through stops, just race up and down the street. And so there's no police presence anywhere. And it's like everyone's asleep at the wheel. But I want to get back to this, you know, this council voted unanimously to advance a proposal to create what they call a new Department of Community safety and violence prevention. So yeah. Now, is this on top of the police? Is this to make, you know, to weld this into the mentality of the policing that we have here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota? I mean, I really don't understand what they're saying when they say defund the police, what the end goal of this is. Does this mean this is, are we going to abandon the union, which historically here has been a huge problem because from my perspective as a longtime citizen here, it appears that they actually run the police department and that the mayor and city council, their authority has been almost neutered because of that union. So I mean, I'm just on the table. I want to see what they're going to come up with because what they're showing me now is total ineptness. They've been an abject failure. And that's why we're in this situation we're in now. So
let me intersect here real quick with you. There's something that you said. They're creating a new office in the city of Minneapolis. The city of Minneapolis is historic for layering different agencies on top of agencies. You have the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, led by Velma Corbell, who is absolutely, that department is not doing their due diligence. You have the Department of Violence and Community, whatever it's called, led by Sasha Cotton, Miss Sasha Cotton. Okay, why would you need another police group when, if you look at how organizations and systems should be run, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights should be handling everything under their banner. So why are you creating more? See, what's happening here is some of their friends might need a job. Okay.
And that's what it is, Don. Yeah. There is a lot of things going on, and we're at the spot right now that we have these groups running around. We have so much grant money flying around. I got into a conversation almost a back and forth with Don Samuels yesterday about the millions of dollars that's been poured into his wife's company. And he knows I'm talking about it because it's on his tape. And their company, Northside Achievement Zone.
Yes.
And there's still Northside Gap. So I don't know what the heck is going on. And what's going on is a lot of people have been getting a lot of money.
Yes.
And there's not been a lot of things going on. And now that is the community oversight that's coming in. People like these groups and these oversight committees are now being threatened because now we're coming in and we don't need the money. We actually need justice and we need transformational change within Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Okay, let me ask both of you. Now, this move to take the SROs, the police officers, out of Minneapolis and St. Paul public schools, good idea or bad idea? Bad idea.
Me personally, I'm going to say, when I say take them out of schools, realistically, they need to be near the school. So if you had a squad car by there, do we need the president inside of the school? I don't think so. But what the money's still going to be spent on security measures, just like we've seen with the Minneapolis Police Department. So we just have to have a real conversation on what it looks like for these oversights. And I honestly, Don, I don't know. I don't know.
I think we really need to get back to the idea of community. I mean, if the policemen are in the schools, well, they're part of the community and they're there to keep people safe, and certain schools are going to have different needs.
Yeah.
But if you have the right principals, if you have the right leadership in your schools where you're connected to the parents, you're really connected to the needs of your community and the students that you're serving, I think that their involvement would be very, very minimal. And I think, like your co-host was saying, you know, they need their presence. They need to be available if they're needed, because certain schools, for whatever reasons, they have more needs than others. But I don't want to see police there to actually exacerbate problems. I mean, that their presence, and depending on their demeanor and their connection to that school or what they think, even about their job and doing it.
And we have the right people,
we can make anything work.
Yeah, and you know what? I need to interject in there. The SROs that I've come in contact with are some of the coolest police officers that I've ever met. And I'm not necessarily saying I have a problem with them, but I understand the stigma, because if I get in my car and I drive down University and I take a left and all of a sudden there's a St. Paul police car behind me, I'm like, damn. what they behind me for. And I can understand that. I can understand that in the schools. You know, the kids are in school. They're wondering what the hell's going on, and there's a police officer there. But that police officer, I think, provides a very concrete and solid construct for the school. And I think the challenge is we need to go back in elementary school, fifth or sixth grade, into middle school, and start teaching about what law enforcement should do, what they can do, what they have done. Because right now this is 5-0, the one time they go get us, you know, and that's not necessarily always true. There are bad apples. We know that. We know that for a fact, okay? But how do we get past the point where we can have a cohort of 50 Minneapolis students and 50 St. Paul students go into different colleges to become police officers? How do we get that community policing piece back in to the community and make sure that we are a part of the law enforcement? I can also, so Jonathan, say that I'm 70, you're 70, and one of your kids is a police officer, one of my kids are a police officer. I know right now from my kid that, you know, he's going around in the hood, he's doing, people know him, he's my son, whatever, they know your kids or whatever, and there's a safety net there, because this guy over here, Mr. Allen's son, is a police officer, and we know him, we know them, and it's more, I guess what I'm trying to say is that
the people within the community
Need to make sure that we have that cohort, a group of community members that are actually doing that actively, and that they're respected, their families are respected. And it's kind of hard to teach respect in school, because that's something that you're supposed to learn at home. And when you get to that point, what's that? Go ahead, Em.
Well, no, I was just going to say, you know, Don, when we started school here, some of the first things that we learned, you know, you'd have officers come in, and we learned that one of the first things you do is you look both ways before you cross the street, okay?
Yeah.
And so we have people that are coming in here that don't even, you know, they go to school, they run across the street, they run in the middle. I saw a little girl get hit running in the middle of the street, and she flipped up in the air like a little doll. And, I mean, my stomach just sunk, because we just haven't had the structure, and we have a lot of new people coming in, but they don't come in with the wherewithal and the parenting to really – the education, the school plays a part.
Yes, it does.
The parents play a bigger part in that, and behavior, and to make sure they get there on time, to make sure they have the food before they get there. And so all of these things have broken down. And when you have this quasi, some of the school leadership and principals that aren't really in tune to really what's going on in our communities today, well, this is where the chaos comes from.
Okay, we have a call. I'd like to get the caller in. Again, our calling number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Caller, last 4-8-6-8-5. You're live on Our Black News. What's your comment or question?
Well, gentlemen, I got a lot on the plate this morning, so I hope I can bring you gentlemen up to speed. I'd like to start off first with that move that Jacob Fry made with this police incident situation. First of all, you don't go to a man's funeral, cry crocodile tears, and then after that man is buried, it's back to business as usual. The whole world sees you, Jacob Fry, for what you really are. Now, that's number one. Number two, Chief Ellis suing, it says, in the Wall Street Journal, suit by the Minnesota says Exxon Koch led lied about the climate improve. Now, Mr. Ellis got a statement in here where he says, let me read this shit, the fraud, deceptive advertising, and other violations of the Minnesota state law and common law that the lawsuit shows they perpetrated have harmed Minnesota's health and our state's environment, infrastructure, and economy. Mr. Ellison said that in the Wall Street Journal Thursday, the 25th of October. Now, we got a lot of issues pending here in this state with 181. Mr. Ellison said nothing about that since he's been a lawyer, congressman, and senator. He says nothing about all these other institutional racism that have harmed, maimed, deceived, caused massive ecological damage to individuals in the state of Minnesota. When are you going to speak up on that? Oh, here we go again. Here's another DFLer, just like the mayor, only looking out for his DFL interest. Now, the third issue is we got a group of Caucasian right-wing extremists calling themselves the Boogaloos. And it is led by a gentleman by the name of Stephen Carlola, who happens to be a gentleman that came from the military. You hear me?
Okay.
He came from the military. He was in the military when he started this organization. Donald Trump don't want to talk about him. Mainstream America don't want to talk about him. But they call Black Lives Matter a terrorist group. That's what our union boss president says. Now, on the school issue, and should the police be in the schools? Well, let's go back to the Harris School incident. That young gentleman who was a martial arts expert, he karate chopped, whooped his teacher. He karate chopped and whooped the African Liberian teacher. He whooped security guards. He whooped everybody. He skated right on out of this town and moved to another state. So where was the police on that incident?
Yeah,
and
you're right.
They were in the schools. Because remember, I went to the school board meeting with Boss Eddie, God bless his soul. I went to the first school board meeting with Ron Edwards, and they gave away $56 million to Southwest High, who didn't need the money. That issue right there, I was so heated, I took the gentleman that was in charge of security for that school and for the Minneapolis Public Schools. You know the only thing he was interested in telling me? He was only interested in telling me, said, well, Al Flowers, he called me out. I said, well, I guess he would call you out if you're not doing the right thing.
Yeah,
that's the
absolutely.
Only thing he had to say. That's the only thing he had to say. And the money got given to Southwest, North High, had to get money from the Super Bowl. They had to get money from all these other big shots that come to town and donate money just to get a gym. This is the kind of crap that you got going on. So if
you can't touch Southwest. You can't touch Southwest High.
Let me ask you guys a question. You can't speak over each other because it just gets mumbled. But let me ask Mr. Brotherman and then run around to him and then throw it back to Jonathan here. Let me just ask this question. Little Birdie called me from the state capitol. I can't, you know, we don't reveal sources here ever. But Little Birdie called me and said there's a few million dollars out on the street from both cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis, both counties, Hennepin and Ramsey, and the state during this COVID-19 crisis. There's a lot of money out on the streets. And besides a couple of black newspapers or news channels, the mainstream black agencies like the Urban League and a couple other folks got nothing. Sabathia, nothing. The Greater Urban League or the Greater Twin Cities, whatever the hell name they're calling it now. I mean, they didn't call it anything, you know, but you just, that's like putting lipstick on a pig. What is your thoughts? Let's start with Mr. M here quickly. What are your thoughts about that? Where is this money? Who's in charge of it? Is it the Minneapolis Foundation? Is there some falling out going on? What kind of information can you guys give us? Or what do you know?
Well, all I can really say is I have actually been contacted by a Somali gentleman.
Okay.
Who calls me, and he tells me that he wants to help. He wants me to help him so that he can help us. And basically what his pitch was is he's got something that wants to start a civil rights museum at the site of the Cub Foods at the Floyd murder. And he tells me that he has all these people behind him. There's big people. No names given to me, okay? No names, no anything. And then he directs me to a fancy professional website where they're trying to put this civil rights museum at the site of the Floyd. I have no idea who this person is. I have no idea what's behind him. And I basically was just listening to him just to hear what he was talking about.
So do you know his name? Do you know his name?
I've got his name on an email somewhere, yes, and I can provide that to you.
Okay, that's very interesting because I've heard there's a movement, and I even got a link to build the Black Civil Rights Museum where the third precinct was.
Oh, well, that's what it was. Excuse me. That's exactly what it was. At the site of the third precinct. That's the same movement. They have a slick little website, no names, and I just have the one name of the Somali that called me. And he's called me several times. I just haven't even got back to it. But I'm just trying to get information on where this is going.
Someone sent me that link, and just let me see if I can find it. Because it was very interesting that we even – you know, something like that is even going on, and you want to know where the money's going, who's collecting the money, and why is it necessary? Go ahead, Jonathan.
That's huge because when you're worth asking for these things, it's not like we haven't asked for a civil rights museum. It's not like we haven't asked for media funds. It's not like we haven't asked for all these things. But what happens is they always give us a channel, a golden tweet. So that's why we have these groups called the African American Heritage with Justin Terrell, and nothing gets done. And every time I email them, they forget to email me back. And we get to these spots where when we're trying to make decisions, they rather have white women, white men, other ethnic groups, Hmong, Liberian, or Somali lead us.
Anything but us.
They feel uncomfortable with us leading.
Yeah, and that's terrible, but, you know, that's how the system has always been in Minnesota. And it's like, you know, how do you get a seat at the table? How do you navigate what's happening now to be conscious and relevant in 2020? Because what I see happening here is a massive shift back to the old normal. I don't see any new normal or different normal happening. And the people that you expect out there to grab the line and pull it back in and say, whoa, 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 we've done that already, are totally silent. So how do you get to the point where you can win, you know? It's tough. It's an uphill battle because, yeah, I mean.
Don, you hit a major point where if they try to shift it back to the old normal, they've wasted all of this money. We haven't went anywhere, and everyone has, and I think we're all fed up. I know you're fed up. I think you were intellectually strong enough to understand the problems that are going directly against us continuously for the last 400 years. And the time is now for us to say there will be no more normal. We'll continue to keep on being great, but now we demand this money.
Yeah, exactly. And we shouldn't be in a position where we always have to ask. You know,
no, I hate it.
I mean, even like with the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, DEED, they have black women, strong black women in strategic positions over there. And
right.
we are looking at how do we get to the point where the connection is made between, you know, what we need now and maybe 5 years, 10 years out.
And you hit a major point is black men, and then this is what I people feel a little weird when I say this type of thing. When you look at the numbers, black women get more jobs than black men in the state of Minnesota. Gay black men get more jobs than homosexual black men. And now we're locked in an order where we're seeing right now a black man is the one being hunted, but after a person like George, who is a heterosexual black male, gets killed, all these other groups put all of their different seasons on it, and before you know it, they're serving up what they want on their agenda, and but using the life of George Floyd and all these other things. And to me, it's quite disgusting because there are black men that are ready to be. Been leading, have been teaching, have been counseling, have been being community leaders, putting our lives on the line. And for some reason, we're just not able to ever get the funds or the resources that we need to make the systematic change that is obviously clearly designed against us.
Yeah, and here on social media, on Facebook, and again, our calling number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904.
John, this is Jim. I wonder if I could just take a minute. I have actually found this email. It would take a couple of minutes. Could I read this email to you? We need your voice to help turn the Minneapolis Police Third Precinct into the Minneapolis Museum of Civil Rights. This project started as an idea between two friends last week. We talked to a few people we know about the idea, and we got a huge amount of support right away. Architects, lawyers, and others stepped up to help us found a nonprofit, build a website, and render concepts for the building in 7 days. This is moving fast, and we're humbled by the support of everyone. We kept this a secret until launch because we want this movement to be from the community, by the community. We want thousands of voices contributing to make a permanent monument to civil rights at the site of the Third Precinct. We did not want a politician taking the idea for their own self-promotion. Now, 24 hours after launching the idea, we're asking for your voice. We want you to help champion this cause. We want your thoughts on how to grow and improve the idea. Let's work together and make this happen and shape the idea based on input from the community. We need black experts in marketing, museum development, historians, content creators, and artists, among other positions, to truly create an amazing, collaborative, inclusive end product. Let us know who we need to talk to. Looking forward to hear from you. All the best. You want me to tell you his name?
Yeah, we want to know his name. Drop it like his
name. The name is All the Best, Mohammed Youssef, president of the board, Minneapolis Civil Rights Museum Project.
I think I know who that is. I actually do think I know who that is. That's very interesting because I am going to shoot him.
Okay, real quick, when he says he's on the board, he's the CEO or whatever the case might be for the city, is this his self-appointed position?
It appears to be so, Jonathan.
Okay, so it sounds good. Well, now I have just named myself the president of every single civil rights museum in the entire universe, and now I want to lead the way for us so we can build our own thing for our own people here in America. Hey, you know what? I want to tell you this, too. Many of us who are Haitians, African descendants of slavery, or you're a Minnesotan and you're 2-3 generation, that's you. We're to the spot where them ball games, them games, them self-appointed positions of manipulation, of the exploitation of the African American people will not go on anymore. And I will make sure these projects will not get completed until we are fully in charge of it, and whether they like it or not.
Thank you.
To go against the status quo.
Yeah, our call-in number again is 347-426-3904. We have a caller. Caller, last 4-4-6-4-4. You're live on our Black News. What's your question or comment?
This is Pianchi. I was just listening to that and laughing.
Okay.
And I'm still having a hard time to stop from laughing. You know, I've traveled extensively over the African continent, especially in Egypt, spent 9 years there, in and out of tombs, temples, museums, and sites. You know why they build museums?
What?
They build museums to show what once was in people who are no longer here.
Okay.
That's why they build museums. And for somebody to ask you about building a museum for African American civil rights, you should punch them in the nose. Because they want you to contribute to your own demise and telling about your own demise. No, if you want, if the money is to be given, is for you to develop an economic base there in Minneapolis, like the African Development Center that was put in place by the Somalis. What was it, Mr. Hussein? Years ago, he's dead now.
Okay.
You have to ask yourself, How is it that these folks can come from way over in Mogadishu and do what it is that they do?
Thank you.
And they want you to build a damn museum. Now, look, I don't live in Minnesota. I don't live in Minneapolis. If people want to do that, go ahead. I don't got my laugh out. The only thing I can do is shake my head. But that's an insult. I mean, think about it. The things that plague blacks in America the most, I think, is economics and education. Your kids, your children are the least on the list when it comes down to educational attainment. You know, Donald Trump just gave another $44 million to Morehouse University for their research center. That's what's needed.
Yeah.
Because their alumni don't contribute back like they should.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Since you brought up a very, very important point, you know, we see all these discrepancies. You know, I'm talking Minnesota specific. We see all these discrepancies in Minnesota in the black community. And the response is either let's put on a concert, let's get a DJ, let's build a museum, or let's display black artwork. It's never, let's get some money going here. Let's get some stuff. And you're absolutely right. You know, to say with all the money that has already been put out there by the state and the county and the city for that first black museum on Third Avenue, I think it was somewhere in excess of $3 million. And to this day, almost six, seven, 8 years later, we still don't know where the money is or what happened to the museum, other than the people that were owed money for remodeling it, sued, they went and purchased the property and moved in. So,
I'm saying is that is just an embarrassment. That's not, you know, in my opinion, you know, music, you know, if you took that $3 million and made it a feeder money for black business, I'm talking about good business. I ain't talking about selling wigs and doing hair and nails.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a sustained business where they can earn and pay it back. You know, I've watched Somalis in a flea market in St. Louis. And every Saturday, they go around and collect money from each vendor that's in there selling Chinese-made stuff that they import here. You know what that money is for? That money is for starting another vendor to come in and set up his shop, and it provides them with the funds, whereas they can order clothes and whatever they're going to be selling. Then when they get on their feet, they pay it back, put it back in that pool. I watched Somali Muslims raised like $30,000 in a half hour for a project there in Vandervina at a church in St. Louis. See,
okay.
They ain't talking about building no damn museum.
No,
and guess
what?
They send them profits back. They send those profits back to Somali. They don't keep them profits here in St. Louis.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Well, hey, caller, thank you for the call. We'll keep you in the queue. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you again very much.
Yeah, don't let.
He was still talking. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Look, get on top of that, man, because it's embarrassing. And you know, can I mention two other things too, if you don't mind?
Go ahead, please.
Like removing this Nancy Green's face off of the pancake mix. That's a slap in the face too, because that family were receiving royalties for her face being there. And look at the history of that woman, what she done in order to create entrepreneurs who were slaves. And now they also talking about taking a statue down in Washington, D.C. that slaves themselves designed and had built, which shows Lincoln and a freed slave. These people are crazy as hell. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you. That's an eye-opener. We have another caller, Em. I'm sorry, but my co-host, Jonathan Mason, has a prior engagement that he had to go do another interview with someone nationally, and plus he's working with Mr. Royce White, and they're giving away things in the community as far as like popsicles and treats like that, and they're going deep into the hoods in the Twin Cities and surrounding suburbs, and kind of doing that kind of thing. But we do have another caller, and our studio producer says this looks like Mr. Tucker. Mr. Tucker, welcome to the show. You're on live. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning,
I think the previous gentleman had it correct. Everything starts with an economic base. I asked the city of Minneapolis council person several years ago, how many contracts does the city of Minneapolis give out? He never answered the question. The next question was, how many American blacks got any of those contracts? They never asked the question. It's always been about economics, always been about economics. And I think that you have a lot of people who think they have arrived and that they are educated, but they're not knowledgeable. You got too many young people on that city council with no experience. In the business community, there's an old adage that says the man with the experience and the man with the money, at the end of the day, the man with the money ends up with the experience, and the man with the experience ends up with the money. These people get caught up in being trying to be accepted versus being respected. I've been in political environments where in the Republican Party, the husband gave $250,000, and then the wife said, you gave $250,000, I'll give $125,000. You can't find very many people in the black community that can give $1,000. I believe that if you had enough money to finance a politician, then that politician will do what you want him. We do not have that, nor do we think that's significant. It's always been about economics. Once you establish an economic base, then you establish a political base. From that political base, then you can do the things you want to do. Education is the top of that pyramid, you know, because a lot of people are educated but not knowledgeable. I have a brother with an eighth grade education that managed to pass an entrance exam to a major college. You know, he was extremely knowledgeable. He wasn't educated, but he was knowledgeable. My great-nephew, Royce White, name at birth was Kevin Kemp Tucker III. His wife changed it. Royce's name at birth was Kevin Kemp Tucker III. He's a Tucker. Okay? You have to understand, if you do not have an economic base, you do not have anything. These petty bourgeoisies, as Frantz Fanon called them, just want to be accepted. They just want to be accepted. They will tell you how many degrees they have. They got more degrees than a thermostat and no money and no power. Stop. Stop. Look at the city. The city reduced the taxes on all the apartment buildings and raised the taxes on all the single-family houses. I know people that went into our wonderful mayor. He's a nice young man. He doesn't have any experience. People knowledgeable have been in the room said he's well-coached. Wisdom comes with experience. He don't have it. And many people on the city council don't have it. We had to fight with them for years to understand that we needed contracts. I got a contract. I had an IRB, if you know what that means, industrial revenue bond, TIF financing. And what happened was that a city council person told me as long as he lived, wasn't no black man, and he didn't use that term, ever going to get any TIF financing. I talked to the then mayor, fired him, reorganized the company, reorganized the department. The blacks in Minneapolis said that I need for you, I had two letters from two major banks. They said, well, we need a letter from the bank saying that they will finance this project. The letter said that they were, well, we want certain documentation in order for us to approve it. We put together a $20 million project for Holman. the then mayor and the city council person said no. I had the backing of Cuomo, okay,
mm-hmm.
who now the governor of New York. They took the data and then after about a couple of months went back and tried to use the same process and try to get it themselves. It's always been about money. I'm a
yeah.
street black. I grew up in the streets in the 50s. It's always been about money and economics. These people don't understand that. They've never been in business. They put too much time trying to be prominent Negroes. Prerequisite for a prominent Negro is to be broke.
Yeah.
You can't be a prominent Negro and have money. Come on. Stop.
You're absolutely right, Detective.
Stop. The previous gentleman is on there had it spot on. Spot on.
Okay.
And one last thing. James Baldwin, Maya Angelou, Professor Gould, okay, W.E.B. Du Bois, said you only have about 10 to 12% of the people who really understand. That has remained constant in all cultures. If you got 100 people in the room, whether they're blue, black, green, white, Asian, African, who you're going to have 10, 12% of that group who really understand. The rest of them going to be sheep.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. You know, we keep following people who want to be prominent Negroes. I had that civil rights person down there. Velma Cabell, come up to me and send somebody over and say, here's a card, talk to me. The Tucker came out in me. I told her to get the hell away from me. You know, I've been in the room with too many notables. They never done that to me. Okay?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely
never
right.
Done that to me.
Mr. Tucker, since I have you there, let me just, you know, how do we get to the point? Because we've been doing a lot of arguing, not arguing, but a lot of complaining. And there are, like you said, Mr. Tucker, a handful of people that actually know what the hell is going on. Just a handful out of the masses. And so when you see these injustices, these economic, I'm not talking about any social, we don't do social justice show at all whatsoever. But when you see the economic justices and what happens, or lack of economic justice, and what happens inside of poverty and how some of these nonprofits are able to move fluently through our poor, poverty-stricken and blighted neighborhoods and communities, but still make salaries in excess of six figures. And don't get me wrong, I'm not mad at a brother's hustle. If you're out there running a nonprofit, you're making $150,000, $200,000 a year, you know, bless your soul. But are you producing an economic base for others to one day get where you are? Are you making sure that the community has access to formulas that are working or that have worked to create wealth? You know? And you're right. There's a lot of poverty pimps out there. A whole lot of poverty pimps not doing a damn thing but getting these grants. You know? And not really turning it back into the community. There's no functioning plans. Mr. Tucker, you said something earlier. You said something, you know, the Holman Project, $20 million project that you and your group put together. You took it to the city, the county, whoever. They shunned you away, and then there's the same things coming out 6 months later. That's happening currently. You know, go over to the Minnesota Department of Economic or Employment and Economic Development. If you read some of those RFPs, requests for proposals, you can tell these people don't have a clue. I don't care if it's media, to housing, to veterans, they do not have a clue. So I would attest that they get this information and they sit there and they say, well, we're going to develop another RFP, but we're going to use person A, person B, and person C's plan and put it in our plan and then put it out there and make it so difficult for the small business or the minority-owned business or even some white businesses to even get granted that money that they can give it to the usual suspect, their usual big foundations. And you know who they are in this town. And they're not doing a damn thing for anybody. Em, would you agree with that?
I would agree. You know, but what's so sad to me, you know, what you gentlemen are saying, you know, I grew up with a man that sat me down one day. He said, "M, don't let nobody fool you. Money is the name of the game, okay?" And so what this man did, my dad, he started books in Chicago, Minneapolis, and I have a book right in front of me that he just didn't ever quite finish that I'm going to finish. But basically, it's a little pamphlet, and it's done in March of 1975, and on the cover is a man named John Mitchell, who was a vice president at Honeywell. But in this little book, teen advertisers, there are all black businesses in Minneapolis, St. Paul, South Minneapolis, North Minneapolis, and St. Paul. 15 small businesses. I mean, limousine services, pet grooming services, pet babysitting, Ken and Norm's Liquor. I mean, it just goes on and on. Jeannie Cooper, who had her own paper, a woman who had the Twin City Observer newspaper, office machine, general contractors. I mean, in engineering, cut boutique. See, we've been here. You know, we've already done this. Things like some way these mechanisms continue to tear us down. You know, the Black Wall Street, the Greenwood, the East St. Louis. It goes on and on. We need to keep. We need to stand. We know how to do this.
Yeah.
And if we stand together, I mean, gas stations, Clark Gas Station, John Mackay Real Estate, Moore's Automobile, Willis Department Store, El Dorado Cleaners, Ezel Jones Insurance, Chicago Food Market, Dynamic Data Service. This is
Jim.
All black business.
Mr. M, let me chime in with you. You and Mr. Tucker. Mr. M, are you saying you remember the Clark Station off 94 and Dale in St. Paul?
I remember that one, but there was also one in Minneapolis.
On Park.
43rd and Nicollet.
And there was also one on Park and Lake Street, across from the car wash. You know?
Yes. So we own those businesses. So, you know, we know we can do it. I mean, there's no, see, they try to tell us that we can't do it.
Don, let me chime in.
Go ahead, Mr. Tucker.
I did two extensive papers on black businesses, one before the antebellum period and one after the antebellum period. I did extensive research on the black businesses in Minneapolis. Okay? I'm aware of all of that. But you have to understand that spend a lot of time making sure that you don't have money so you cannot buy you a politician. They for sale. If you cannot finance a city council person, how in the hell are you going to try to finance reparations? You can't finance a city council, people. How are you going to finance a congressman or a senator?
Exactly.
Some of these people are having a wet dream. Excuse my language.
Well, that language. And I'm glad you said that, Mr. Tucker, because I'm seeing this information flowing around in the mailers and on social media talking about we're going to do this big reparation thing. Reparations. So I'm like, okay, wait a minute. We know it's restitution, then reparation. So I look into it because I'm looking for something to read. I'm looking for a plan. And when I see it, it's a rally at the state capitol. And I'm going like, you're not getting reparations for a rally at the state capitol. Who gives a hoot? You know, really, come on. Be honest about this. Okay?
Well,
it's good to bring attention. Go ahead, Ms. Tucker.
You presuppose that these folks at the state capitol are knowledgeable. They're not. You presuppose that they know how to do it, and they don't. You marginalize your own self by giving them the credence that they don't deserve and have not proven to me that they have it. I've been in the room too many times with these people. I've been in these rooms since the 60s, met with mayors and congressmen in all kinds of crazy places, little coffee houses and other obscure places, meeting with them off out of the city hall. They do not know. Why are you giving these people I'm going to say something my daughter said. What we're being in this city is colonized. We're being colonized. Mm-hmm. And we got too many people running to the head of the line and don't know which way to go.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So, that's all.
Like this civil rights person. Here's my car. Give me a call. I've been in a room with Ron Brown. Ron Brown didn't say, here's my car. Give me a call. I talked to Maynard Jackson. He didn't say, I'm Maynard Jackson. I'm the mayor of Atlanta. What do you want? I didn't get that out of any of those people. And I can name 10 more notables. These people don't know. They got an illusion of grandeur.
Big time.
Illusion
Big
of grandeur.
Time.
All they are gatekeepers. All they're there to protect the mayor and protect their job. I understand that. But don't get it twisted. Don't you think you important, because you're not important to me. You know, I'm going to say something to my mother. If you think the sun sets and rises on you, somebody should rise up and defecate on you. Come on.
With a little bit under 5 minutes left, you know, I would just like to state, and I want to let Em have a couple words before we shut out here, that there's a systemic problem from this boutique community engagement about defunding the police, taking the police out of the schools. I think it was hasty and not well thought out. But again, to your credit, Mr. Tucker, what you said, we're presupposing that some of these folks know what they're doing. And a lot of this stuff is adrenaline-based and emotion-based, and there's no logic at all whatsoever. So we'll see what happens. If this moves forward, let's see how they can change the organizational health in the police department. Let's see how they can change the organizational health inside of a school district without police. The police have to be there, be able to be called. Someone has to be able to be called. And so that's the piece that I'm trying to figure out. And then getting back on the reparations piece, which should be restitution then reparations, because you sue for reparations via restitution. And, you know, we could ask these folks, you know, where is the plan? Because you're not going to bully the mainstream into giving you reparations at all whatsoever. We know that. You're not going to bully politicians. We can't afford to buy any politicians. And so we're set here looking at what we have. We have some cowboys, you know, that sit in the Senate, some cowboys that sit in the, a cowgirl, I should say, that sits in the House of Representatives. And how do you reach these people to make sure, you know, I don't know if everybody understands this, but the legislative session is over for 2020. There was no major package for black Minnesotans, not even put out by Justin Terrell and the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, which is one of their missions that they're supposed to do. And so the focus got taken away from the business. It's unfortunate that Mr. George Floyd was murdered, but there is no but. We didn't get what we need, and we're not asking for handouts. We're asking for a hand up, and there was no legislation passed that will help individuals in this community that are a shade darker than khaki, period. With that said, I'd like to thank everybody for listening and watching on Facebook Live. You've been listening to Our Black News. Congratulations to my co-host, my special co-host today, Mr. M on the line there. And thank you, Mr. Tucker, for calling. And also Jonathan Mason, who is now with Mr. Royce White. I guess they're giving away popsicles deep in the hood in the community, different communities in Minneapolis, St. Paul. That's really good. And again, thank you for listening. This is Our Black News. We'll be back next Saturday morning. James Brown, take it away.